This is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. There's a silent health crisis that's affecting one-third of Americans. It's called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Fat in your liver can make you prone to developing cardiovascular disease, liver cirrhosis, and even cancer. While most of us know the negative effects excessive alcohol consumption has on the liver, fat in your liver can be just as dangerous. So many of us, we strive to have a skinnier body. Today we discuss the importance of attaining a skinny liver. Award-winning dietitian Kristen Kirkpatrick, author of Skinny Liver, joins us to share this important, possibly life-saving information. Don't go anywhere. It all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is an award-winning dietitian who manages the Wellness Nutrition Services at the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute. She's appeared on many national TV programs, including The Today Show, NBC Nightly News, and The Dr. Oz Show. She contributes to national newspapers and magazines such as The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, Time, Oprah, Martha Stewart, and Huffington Post, just to name a few. She's also a sought-after national speaker on a variety of nutrition and wellness-related topics. Her new book is called Skinny Liver, a proven program to prevent and reverse the new silent epidemic, fatty liver disease. Please welcome to the show, Kristen Kirkpatrick.
Thanks, Dr. Friedman. It's an honor and a privilege to be with you today.
Oh, great to have you with us. And I have to share something with you. My book, Food Sanity, just came out, and I drove to the bookstore to fulfill a lifelong dream seeing my book on the shelves at Barnes & Noble. And there sitting next to my book was Skinny Liver. It immediately caught my attention, and as I perused through the chapters, I became more excited about finding your book at Barnes & Noble than seeing my own there. So I purchased the book, and I have to say Skinny Liver belongs in everybody's personal library. So many people believe if they're not drinking excessive alcohol, there's no need to worry about their liver. Share with us why that's not the case.
Well, definitely not the case, because what we are seeing with this new epidemic is really damage to the liver that has nothing to do with alcohol. You're absolutely correct in that most of my patients and most of the people that I interviewed for this book just say, well, I'm a pretty moderate drinker. I don't have to worry about that. This has nothing to do with drinking. Obviously, alcohol does damage the liver in large amounts. This has to do with poor lifestyle choices. So I think in some ways, some people will see this book and say, well, there's probably nothing wrong with my liver. But if anyone has a liver, which we all do, we were all born with one, you need this book. I agree.
Right. So you do mention lifestyle changes. Now, what's a couple examples of stuff we can start doing today that can aid the health of our liver?
Yeah, sure. So I think probably the big ticket item that I came up with the research is really lowering sugar intake. We eat just millions and millions and millions of pounds of sugar every year, and we are well over the recommended amounts. Now, I know I can tell you from my patients at Cleveland Clinic, many of them make conscious efforts to reduce their sugar intake, but what I see more of a trend now is people consuming sugar in hidden areas. So they don't know that they have sugar in their crackers and things like that. That's a big problem because it's really the sugar that ends up being one of the main culprits to actually increase fat in the liver more than what should be a normal amount. So I would say that's kind of number one. And if you're listening, and even if you're just like, hey, I have a cola every single day, is that bad? Yeah, that's bad. We need to really get below 25 grams of sugar every single day if we can. And if we can go less than that, that's even more preferred.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, sugar's hidden in things like even stuff we don't realize, ketchup, salad dressings. I mean, stuff that's not really sweet, so people don't associate, oh, that has sugar because ketchup's not really sweet. But when you're talking sugar, do you mean just the white processed sugar? Is honey bad for us? Agave nectar? Is it all sweets or specifically white table sugar?
No, I'm talking any sugar, other than fresh fruit and obviously starchy vegetables that are going to increase insulin and blood glucose as well. Really, when you look at it and you look at the formation of fat in the liver, it's really looking at the sensitivity of insulin and glucose. And so a lot of people will say, like, I'll interview them and I'll say, oh, do you have any sugar in your diet? And they'll say, oh, no, I don't have any. And then they'll tell me a few minutes later, well, I have some honey, but that doesn't count. It unfortunately does. Even though it's a natural source, What we look at in the research is what is the impact on insulin levels and glucose levels. And if that impact is giving you this sky-high approach to something that you've eaten, that then can cause damage to the liver if it occurs over and over and over again through the day. So while a lot of those other sources seem to be, quote, alternative or even better, they really aren't. I mean, really what we need to do is curb the sweet tooth. So it's okay to have honey every once in a while. It's okay to have agave nectar every once in a while in small amounts. What's not okay is to think it's a substitute for white table sugar.
Right. You know, there's this big belief that the liver is like a garbage disposal. I heard it 30, 40 years ago. And even if you eat something that's bad for you, it takes care of itself. And that's not true. Are there any foods that people can take besides sugar that could damage the liver?
Oh, sure. I mean, a lot of the studies that we saw, of course, had a lot to do with sugar, but there were some studies also looking at very high fat foods. Not as much as the sugar, but things that are very high in trans fats seem to be damaging as well, especially because you have these triglycerides and fatty acids that are being released when you get the formation of fatty liver. And it's really just, you know, aside from that, I would say if you're eating any kind of white carbohydrate, again, the big chunk of our diet as Americans is white carbohydrates. We love pizza and we love things that are breaded and we love rolls. So again, it's looking at that carb source. How can we reduce the reliance on insulin and blood sugar? And what are some of the foods we can kind of take away? And what are some of the foods we can add in to benefit?
Great. And I know in your book, you mentioned the importance of a non-inflammatory diet. Share with the listeners, what type of foods does this include?
Yeah, so at the top of the list, what I always tell my patients, I always say, you know, people are not following the recommendations for fruits and vegetables. It's just too daunting. It's too overwhelming. So people will wake up in the morning and say, I'm supposed to have 7 to 8. Are you kidding me? I can't do that. So what I do is I break it down into colors. I tell my patients the most anti-inflammatory diet they can have is one that is full of naturally sourced colors. So if you can get 5 colors in every single day, you're doing a really good job. So that's the first thing. And obviously that's going to come from plants, fruits, vegetables. We don't want to forget about things like legumes. So when people say, oh, what's the most vibrant hued color out there in the plant world? A lot of times I'll say black beans. I mean, that's a really dark color. And the more color something has, the more benefit to your health. So I would say that's kind of number one. There actually have been a lot of studies. I mean, I was actually surprised to see this, but tons of studies looking at consumption of coffee and how many great benefits there are to having coffee in the diet in terms of your liver health. And then, of course, we can get into some smaller areas. We can look at things like garlic and the allium family, onions, leeks, things of that nature. We can look at herbs. Herbs are very anti-inflammatory. But to kind of sum it all up, it really is any kind of plant that has a lot of color that was formed by nature and that is actual food, not processed calories, not food-like items, but actual food.
Wow, good information. So eat like a rainbow for that liver. That's the
exactly.
key.
Exactly.
Different colors, yeah. Are there any symptoms of fatty liver disease? How can somebody know if they have it?
So that's really why I decided to write the book, to be quite honest with you, because in the early stages, you really don't have too many symptoms. You might get some fatigue. And one of the things I always say is who doesn't have fatigue on a regular basis, might not be every day, but I'm sure there's days during the week when you have fatigue. I sure do. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the first symptom that people have when they're really in the more reversible stages. Once you get into those more non-reversible stages is when you start getting more of the pain and, you know, other more severe symptoms that might kind of alert you, hey, I think there might be something going on. So that's why the hepatologist that worked with me, I was able to shadow the majority of his patients for a few months. And really, a lot of these patients were diagnosed simply because they had routine blood. I mean, that's it. Go to see your physician every year. If your liver enzymes are slightly elevated and you fit other criteria, perhaps you are obese, overweight, those might be things to prompt your physician to say, hey, let's maybe look at an ultrasound of the liver. There's really no symptoms in the beginning. That's why it's such a silent epidemic.
So somebody has these symptoms. They do get the blood tests. They get the ultrasound. He says, yes, you have fatty liver. Is it reversible or is that something that's permanent?
Yeah, no, it's definitely reversible in the first few stages. So the majority of people that get this do have it in that reversible time frame. And so, you know, that's really the point of looking at some of these lifestyle changes, exercising more, changing your diet, incorporating stress management techniques, all things that we know help to reverse fatty liver, you know, probably weight loss being the number one thing. So I think, you know, in the first few stages when you just have maybe some fat in the liver, before you get to really severe fibrosis, and for sure before you get to any cirrhosis, but it's not reversible at that point. That's when I think it's really the time to say, okay, I have some time to reverse this. I'm going to really pay attention to this and I'm going to do something about it. I'll tell you something else. This is why it's such a concerning disease right now for children, because they have so many years in front of them. So just from a time standpoint of how much time do you have to live, they have more time to progress to those latter stages. So I think that's why, you know, it's so important to get that early screening, to be really attentive to it and to say, okay, I'm overweight. Maybe I don't have the best diet, or maybe your diet's okay. You think it's okay. I got to go see my doctor.
Right. Now, you mentioned the fatty liver is more prevalent in people that are overweight. Can skinny people have too much fat in their liver as well?
Yeah, they can. There are some genetic things that we have seen occur where people can definitely have more fat in their liver. You don't necessarily need to be skinny fat. I'm sure you've heard that term before, where you have a normal BMI, but you don't really have a lot of muscle mass. So most of your mass is fat. But there's definitely a few cases. It's not the majority, but definitely a few cases where we've seen this. We also see a higher prevalence in Asian and Hispanic populations as well. So there's some genetics going on there too. But again, I mean, just because you're thin doesn't protect you from it. If your diet is god awful and you're thin, I tell my patients, hey, you still need to get things checked out, because, you know, the body doesn't really act well when you give it junk. It wants good food. It wants nourishment. And when you don't do that, it can kind of fight against you. So let's see if it's doing that or not. It might be worth kind of seeing your doctor to determine that.
Yeah. Interesting question. I just thought of you mentioned the different types of people that get it, but what about age? I know we've got children now that are obese. Does fatty liver take a while to accumulate, or do you find this in children?
We do see it in children. In fact, it is the number one liver disease that we're seeing in children right now, which is very scary. And we are seeing it in children sometimes as young as two. So it's definitely something where we're starting to see more than the normal amounts. If you're over about 10% of fat in your liver, now you're over the normal amounts, because the liver does have some fat in it.
Right.
And definitely prevalent in children. I mean, the obesity rates in children continue to go up, as do rates of type 2 diabetes. And type 2 diabetes and fatty liver are very closely linked. So for sure, we have seen many cases in writing the book of children who were 9, 10, 11 years old that were in the beginning stages of fatty liver disease. Very scary.
Very scary. And I was wondering, you said a word, you quickly said this big word that we all can relate to, and it jumped out at me. It's called stress. And I'm wondering about the people that are hearing you saying, you know, I eat right, I don't do sugar, and I do organic, but maybe they're just stressed out. Are they still at risk for fatty liver?
Well, I think the stress alone, if everything else is great, so if you're like the healthiest guy on the face of the earth, but you happen to have the highest stress job ever, that might not prompt your body to deliver a little bit more fat to the liver. You probably need a few more things added in to create that perfect storm. But we do know that there is a connection. So individuals that have the disease or that have those other comorbidities, we do know that having excess stress that is not managed raises the hormone cortisol. Cortisol then creates inflammatory factors, and that then could create more fat in the liver. So we do know, even looking at some of the programs we've done at Cleveland Clinic, that in order to truly change your lifestyle, you can't just move more and you can't just eat better. You have to recognize and manage stress. That's the third thing that people forget about all the time, but it's such a critical component to success.
Yeah, it's important. What about all these liver detoxes we hear about? People do everything from cleanses, juice fast, teas, herbs, tinctures, to sweating it out at the sauna. Are any of these beneficial?
No.
No?
If they were, we wouldn't have this disease, right? So what I tell my patients is, Listen, you could go to the grocery store and you could spend $100 on a liver detox system or powder or whatever the heck you're going to have, or you could go spend it on fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains, right? Your money's going to be much better to the food. So what we know is that we're all born with this amazing, glorious, wonderful organ, and that this is our detox organ. We don't need anything to help this organ to detox. We have a three-phase approach to detoxing, and all of these things are really, I mean, in some ways they're money makers. They're probably not going to hurt you, but in a lot of ways it's really just kind of a waste of money. I mean, you could be spending your hard-earned money on real food. So I would encourage my patients, like, you know, stay away from these things. Focus instead on food. If you look at populations, if you look at the blue zones, for example, people that have been living for much longer and have much less disease than the typical Westerner, we know that they are not going to the supplement store and buying a detox potion, right? They're eating actual food. They're moving. So there is something to be said for that. Not taking that shortcut is really the way to ensure longevity.
Yeah, you bring up such a good point, because I have a patient who drinks all the time and eats bad, but you know what? He says, I take my milk thistle, so I'm safe.
Oh, geez, so frustrating. Good intentions, but just bad execution.
Definitely. And in your book, you also share how environmental toxins can contribute to the cause of fatty liver disease. Exposure to metals like mercury or lead, or even chemicals like BPA and PFOAs. What can people do to avoid these destructive elements?
Yeah, so I think, there's a few things. I mean, it really, number one, kind of following the Environmental Working Group's Dirty Dozen list in terms of fresh fruits and vegetables. So really getting the options there that have the least amount of pesticides and herbicides, that would be number one. I would say if you're going to consume fish and things like that, you want to go with wild to avoid the PCBs that sometimes come with farmed fish. And from an environmental standpoint, little things. Take your shoes off when you come into the house. There could be some things on the lawn like pesticides or things like that might get onto that. So that's one thing that you want to do. Hanging your dry cleaning, things like that could help. So I think there's a lot of approaches that we could take in terms of trying to reduce that environmental impact. But I do think it starts with food, looking at some of the organic options, looking at the wild fish, things like that are going to be really helpful.
Right. And probably we mentioned food, but I guess water would be an issue if people are trusting their tap water. There's a lot of chemicals in there, and we falsely believe the city's filtering it out and it's inspected. So that could probably play an issue as well.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. And so getting a good filtration system, even getting a system where you have kind of those jugs of water, that's what I have at my house.
Right.
That's another option that you could do as well. But just think about all the things that you put in your mouth or that perhaps come through your skin. I mean, anything like that is going to end up going to the liver if there's any kind of damage that could be done with it. So I think those are all things to look at in addition to all the other things that are really important.
Got it. You know, the liver seems to have taken a back seat when it comes to all the organs. The liver is involved in metabolizing carbohydrates, proteins, fats, keeps our blood sugar in balance. It helps with metabolism of our hormones. Why are books like yours so rare, yet hundreds exist on keeping our heart healthy?
Well, it's interesting. When I was writing the book, people would say, oh my gosh, we're so excited you're finally writing a book, and what is it about? And initially I was like, oh, it's about the liver, right? Just wait for the reaction, right? Kind of. I think what I always say is that the liver is probably the least sexy organ that we have. There's so much attention to the heart and the brain, and rightfully so. Those are very important organs. We need them to keep us alive. But, you know, if we don't have a liver, we're dead. So there's so many important factors that go to it. I think people don't think about it because you hear more about heart disease than you do liver disease. So from a public health standpoint, you just don't get the message as much. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is you don't necessarily feel it. There is something to be said for having a heart attack and feeling it, or having, you know, something occur where you're actually feeling, oh, my gosh, there's something going on with my organ. I got to fix this. You don't necessarily feel something with the liver. You just kind of assume that it's doing the job and you move on from it. So I think that's why it's not a sexy organ. It's my favorite organ, but it just doesn't get the attention it deserves. I also think that is one of the contributors to why this disease has so rapidly increased over the past decade.
Right. And not only that, you know, when people hear about the heart, they know exercise is important. But in your book, you share the important role exercise plays on the health of the liver. And being that so many people sit behind a computer all day at work and then they lay on their couch watching TV at night, could the sedentary lifestyle that people blame so much on heart disease also be a cause of fatty liver disease?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we know that exercise has a great impact on insulin sensitivity. And because insulin has such a connection to the liver, exercise really plays a very big role. Obviously, it's going to help with weight loss as well. I think food and your diet will trump exercise in the beginning. So what I tell my patients is if it's too overwhelming to change your diet and your exercise routine, start with diet. But the exercise component for sure helps with that sensitivity, and that then helps with reduction of fat in the liver, prevention of more fat in the liver, and ultimate reversal of the condition.
Right. Good point. People don't associate exercise with the liver. So you hear that, folks? Get your heart and
exactly.
liver together. Get those both doing well with exercise. That's phenomenal.
Exactly.
Hey, in the minute we have left, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners about skinny liver? Why should everybody listening get this book like I did?
Yeah, so I think the main importance why we really want to look at this book, people think of it and again say, I don't have anything wrong with my liver. But again, if you were born with a liver and if you eat and if you live in this world where there are toxins all over the place, you need it. You just need to take more attention to this and not think I'm not going to be one of those people that is getting this condition. Because chances are if you're overweight or obese, you already have it.
Exactly. All good points. Thanks for sharing such great information. I think this is vital for everybody to learn and address today. Don't, like she said, don't wait till the end result when you got cirrhosis of the liver. It's important. So thanks for being here, sharing such great information. To learn more or to get your copy of Skinny Liver, go to KristenKirkpatrick.com. And hey, while you're there, be sure and check out her blog post and healthy recipes. Also, sign up for her newsletter. You can follow Kristen on Twitter at KristenKirkPact. And also on Instagram, Chrissy Picks. And for my daily health tweets, follow me at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Health Radio Doc. Now, if you heard Kristen share information today that you just know somebody needs to hear, send them a link to this podcast. It's available to yourgoodhealthradio.com and peruse our podcast library and share segments of interest with friends, family, coworkers, and on social media. This information is just too important to keep to yourself. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iHeartRadio and iTunes. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.